Today on Seculo, President Biden is projecting American weakness abroad ahead of his summit with Vladimir Putin. On Wednesday, we'll talk about the G7, the NATO meetings today, especially with Turkish President Erdogan, all today on Seculo.
Live from Washington, D.C., Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
So while we have still yet to see any kind of joint press conference with President Biden and other world leaders, he did hold one at the end of the G7 summit. It was a pretty dull, bland, which was kind of how the whole summit was. When you actually go through, we talk about a lot with Rick Rennell, when you have to come to consensus, even with just seven countries where you think consensus, if you're really in line, would be easier to come about and the consensus could be stronger. Well, it wasn't. They called on these seven countries, called on the World Health Organization to launch a second phase investigation into the origins of COVID-19. You would think these world leaders would realize at this point that the WHO was paid off by China. And if you didn't accept their first investigation, why send the same organization back when you know China has no interest or is not likely to give them at all any new kind of access that would change their ability to do an investigation? So that was one. Then they had this statement coming out about China. Again, very, very weak statement on China. This is what it said. At the same time, and in so doing, we'll promote our values, including by calling on China to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms, especially in relation to Xinjiang and those rights, freedoms, and high degree of autonomy for Hong Kong. You know, they don't even mention that it's the Uyghurs in Xinjiang that are the U.S., which, by the way, President Biden represents, has identified and determined that this is a genocide ongoing by China. But you wouldn't know that from reading a statement that China's not just got issues with human rights, but is actually engaged in what the U.S. believes is an ongoing genocide. You look at it, of course, they're committed to ensure that Iran will never develop a nuclear weapon by getting back into the nuclear deal with Iran that puts them on a path to a nuclear weapon while sanctions are being lifted on Iran as we speak. But there are two big items this week. One, which will dominate at least through Wednesday and Thursday, which is President Biden's meeting with Russia. You know, I want to put up on the screen Time Magazine. Here's the Time Magazine from Biden's about to meet with Putin. Look at him. He's got his aviators on. Putin's in his sights. All the wrinkles have been airbrushed. He looks like, you know, like he's this really tough guy ready to take on a strong man. And you look at the picture of the right, and it's Putin and Trump's faces, you know, molded together. The idea, again, how the media portrays this is going to be very important, because you're hearing very little from Joe Biden. We already know that Joe Biden will not do a joint press conference with Vladimir Putin. I want to go to Andy on this, because Andy, the way you stand up to a strong man is you get into those, if you believe you need to stand up to a strong man, and certainly we've got issues of hacking, the pipeline issues, and all of those problems they think that Russia's responsible for, wouldn't they want to then put Vladimir Putin, stand next to him and say, you're doing this, 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 and this wrong. We're the United States of America, and we're telling the world right now, no more of this?
That's exactly what you would want to do, Jordan. You'd want to be able to confront the person and accuse him directly of the human rights violations with that have been occurring in Russia, clearly, of the interference in the Ukraine, of the threatening of the Ukrainian people, of the annexation of Crimea. You'd want to be in confrontation with him and let him know exactly who the strong party in the room is and not who the weak party in the room is. And by not doing that kind of joint press conference, which the President of the United States has declined to do, you're sending a message that you are either frightened or incapable of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, no joint press conferences at all. We'll be right back on Seculo. We'll get into China. We'll get into Russia. We'll take your calls and comments.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Summed up what they thought of the G7 statement about, you know, their respect for human rights and don't actually call them out for genocide and don't actually call them out for COVID. And by the way, we'll send just another China-backed team in to investigate a phase two investigation of the origins of COVID, acknowledging that the lab leak theory is now a leading theory, but at the same time, sending the same people back in who will then come tell us, I almost guarantee it, if that ever even occurs, which, by the way, China is not so into even allowing the WHO back in, that they'll come back and tell us, no way, couldn't have been a lab leak. Well, how do you know that? Well, based on the information we got. Did you get any new information? Not really. You know, China didn't let us back in the lab. But, you know, President Biden also tweeted today, our NATO alliance is stronger than ever. Again, I want to go to Andy, then I'm going to go to Thane in Washington, D.C., because, Andy, we know that sometime today, and it could be happening right now, President Biden is going to be sitting down with President Erdogan of Turkey, a NATO ally, and that if you're including Turkey, there is no way to claim that the alliance is stronger than ever before.
No, it's not. That's a false statement, and it's a false claim. It's a claim that's not going to be supported. Turkey is not going to be bound by any NATO alliance as opposed to its own national interests. We didn't sell them the fighter jets that they wanted. They went to Russia and they got them. We had to put pressure on them through President Trump to release Pastor Brunson. President Trump had to basically say, I'll crumble the lira into pennies. And Erdogan then crumpled on over and gave up Pastor Brunson, who had been a captive for years in Russia. So the only way that Sultan Erdogan understands is the use of force. And his national interest is going to take precedence over anything with respect to the NATO alliance, in my opinion, that is ever going to be pressured upon him, if it can be pressured by President Biden.
You know, here is, I want to get Thad's thoughts on this, because, again, President Biden, we criticize here, there was no joint press conference with Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK. That is a very normal thing that we usually see, and we get the back and forth, but also that kind of statement that as countries, they stand together. We stand together as leading democracies around the world. So going into these group meetings, we're going to assert ourselves. But we didn't see any of that. We saw at the end of this, a press conference that was very carefully managed. They had at one point Joe Biden saying, I'm going to get in trouble with my staff if I continue to take questions. So they, of course, told him, this is who to call on. This is how many to take. This is what to say. and then leave. Don't deviate from the script. But he did get asked a question on China. Take a listen, Byte 24.
Are you satisfied with what came out in the communique,
yes,
or did you wish it were tougher? Do you wish there was more action on China?
I think there's plenty of action on China, and there's always something that you can, I'm sure my colleagues think there's things they think they could improve that they want it, but I'm satisfied.
I mean, satisfied, Than, it's like a slap on the wrist for China, which the U.S. official position is they're engaged in a domestic genocide. And now the Biden administration, too, official position is that the lab leak theory is a legitimate theory and that there needs to be another investigation, but they want to send the World Health Organization back in. So they don't even mention the word genocide. That doesn't seem strong. That doesn't seem like they've united front. And, of course, saying that they want to put the World Health Organization back in for a round two investigation is basically just saying we want the same results.
Well, first of all, Jordan, on the question of press conferences, I think the reason they're not happening is because there's just no way you can send a strong message given the U.S.'s posture in the world under this administration. Optically, you just can't pull it off. But I think this question about China is really the most significant one to come out of these first few days. Two quick points on it. First of all, Jordan, breaking news. I can predict what the World Health Organization is going to conclude about China's role in COVID. I can predict it right now. Deferring to them is a waste of time. That's number one. Number two, it takes until paragraph 49 in a 70-page document to get to this issue of genocide. If we're serious about the fact that the Uyghur people are being are the victims of genocide, that they're being exterminated through forced sterilization and these work camps, Jordan, that has to appear closer to the top of the document. It's almost a throwaway by the time they get to 49. And then, Jordan, the document doesn't even name the people that are being exterminated. They don't even go so far as to say it is the Uyghur people who the Chinese government is exterminating. If that is a strong enough document for the United States, I'll tell you this, Jordan, our designation of genocide at this moment under this administration, it doesn't mean a whole lot.
No, it doesn't. I mean, the headline from NBC News on China is that China tells the G7 leaders, quote, small groups don't rule the world. Andy, the idea that China now sees a organization of one of the most dynamic economies in the world, but led by the United States, or supposed to be led by the United States. We just look kind of like one of the ordinary members this time, which is why I think China seized on that. But still, the idea that they don't believe, under this administration at least, that the U.S. is going to go in and assert any of the ideas, they put on paper at the State Department, oh, it's a genocide, oh, they shouldn't be doing this, they shouldn't be doing that. But this kind of is very telling about what China thinks of these organizations, informal organizations like the G7 and others. That the small groups no longer, they don't rule the world, and that would include a group with the United States of America. That's a pretty shocking statement out of China.
You're absolutely right, Jordan. It's a shocking statement, but it's a true statement. The Chinese are basically poo-pooing this G7 and thinking of another. This was another world and another time. This was another period in the history of the planet. There was a group of seven democratic nations, supposedly, who rule the world through their economies and through their political influence. And the Chinese are laughing at that, saying, who's got the political influence? Who's got the economic influence? Who's got the influence in the world now? You can't ignore us. You're not going to ignore us. And we're going to basically poo-poo you and your great pretensions to international power and international authority. You're not going to call us out by name and say the Uyghurs are being persecuted. You're just going to say Qingpeng province is being the place. You don't have the guts to name the people. You don't have the guts to tell us to have an independent organization instead of the Chinese-backed and financed WHO to determine whether this vaccine was transmitted from a bat, a ridiculous theory, or whether it was intentionally, in my opinion, let loose from a lab. And the Chinese are laughing at this whole process that is going on in Europe right now, and for good reason, because we're coming across as weak and effete. We're not coming across as strong. And the United States now, instead of being in a position of leadership among this group of G7, is just one of the boys, one of the crowd.
Well, this idea too, Than, that, again, we're the way the media is just slobbering all over this for the most part, which they aren't doing, by the way, anymore with Vice President Harris. They are they have really turned the tides there. But on but when it comes to President Biden, it's, you know, this is a reset. The world sees us in a different way. I think that the overall how the world sees us is we're back to being the piggy bank for the world. We will fund all of their ideas. We will give up on our own economic interests. There was even something in the G7 that said we want to make sure that there's a minimum world, but domestic tax on corporations at 15%. Now, it's higher than that in the U.S. But this idea, again, that we would be giving up our sovereignty when it comes to our domestic taxation system as well. You know, I get that the idea that these are trade partners and you talk about these issues, but they were talking about a worldwide minimum of 15%, which would also damage a lot of small countries who utilize tax incentives so that they can get companies into their country to get jobs in their country. And it works at a smaller level. It may not work for the country the size of the U.S., but it works for some of these smaller countries. So certainly it would be damaging for them. But this idea of giving up leadership, giving up sovereignty over our tax system, like the Paris Tax Accord, giving up our ability to set what we believe are the best emission standards for our country. This, again, it's no longer America first, and that is on display. And in fact, I even saw a CNN headline, Than, that said this is to undo the idea. What the Biden team is doing is to undo the idea of America first. It is every president's job, Than, to put America first. It's not to ignore the world or the world's problems, but it's to start off with the point of America first.
It's quite a shift in policy, isn't it, Jordan, away from making sure that the other countries of the world are pulling their load and contributing to these international bodies at the levels required of them. That's what we saw from the last administration. This is exactly the opposite approach. By the way, Jordan, like you said, we're going to be the world's piggy bank. It's not just that we're, you know, our allies' piggy bank, which can have its own problems. Jordan, we're funding our enemies right now. I mean, this is a topic we've talked about plenty of times on this broadcast. But when our staunchest ally in the Middle East, Israel, when we are a reopening funding to their allies, people who continue to say that they want them to be wiped off their map, that is not a good strategy. The other thing that was interesting, Jordan, just very quickly, I don't think if Vladimir Putin had said what he said about Iran and the fact that we're just doing what the JCPOA allowed during the Trump administration, I don't think it would have been covered the same way.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, now I want your thoughts on this. 1-800-684-3110. Give us a call. How do you believe these foreign trips are going for President Biden, Vice President Harris, and of course the lead up to this meeting with Putin on Wednesday? Give us a call. I want your thoughts. 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Seculo. You know, Rick Rinnell, a member of our team, he tweeted this morning that Biden is afraid to hold a press conference with Putin, and Putin loves it. And this idea, again, no press conference even with Boris Johnson. So all we've had is this one single carefully managed press conference that Joe Biden took part in as our president. After the G7 solo, he even made remarks again about getting in trouble with his staff if he continued to take questions or deviate at all from his carefully put together script. It is a huge contrast. You know, people always said, "Oh, President Trump, you know, it stresses me out." This idea of that he spoke what he believed, that he put information out there, he responded in real time. You're now getting a taste of what it's like to have a president that is in hiding for the most part, that is doing as little as possible in public. So he had to do some kind of press conference because everybody was pointing out how absurd this was. So he did it, but he didn't do the typical joint press conference. He's going to speak to the press after he meets with Putin, but then we're just going to get his account of it. Then we're going to get Putin's account of it. It's going to be different, but they don't have to do it together, which makes it tougher and more difficult on both. So again, this idea that we were used, and the media, as much as they didn't like being called fake news and being called out, they had unprecedented access to the thoughts, to the thinking process, to the mindset of the president of the United States. With this president, it'd be better off to bring up his advisors to ask them questions, because I think that's who is got the most control, the most power, and the most influence. So maybe we need to stop worrying about getting press conferences with Joe Biden and getting press conferences instead with Jake Sullivan, who's running the National Security Council. Maybe we should look for press conferences with people like Susan Rice. What's she up to? She must be handling domestic issues. Because even when President Biden does a press conference, he talks about how he gets in trouble. I mean, take a listen, bite two.
I'm sorry, I'm going to get in trouble with staff if I don't do this the right way. Jennifer Jacobs, Bloomberg.
That means he's being told exactly what reporter to call on. That might mean that he has an idea of what they're going to ask about, or at least they're what they've been writing about. There's a reason why he's going through that checklist like that. And he even acknowledges, I don't know if he's just speaking out loud, but that he's going to get in trouble if he deviates at all. Now, he's the president of the United States. If he wants to take another question, or if he wants to address something else in his press conference, he has the right to do that as president of the United States, as the commander in chief, as what is supposed to be the leader of the free world. So I play that just to underscore this idea that he does not feel like he's got the ability to do as what he wants to do and communicate, and he's happy to go along with it. That being said, the media so far is somewhat allowing him to get away with it. I mean, there was concerned that he wasn't doing press conferences. So how long will that last? I think they're beginning to turn more and more every day on the Biden administration, because they were used to having the Trump administration. Their ratings were higher. Their numbers were higher. More people were tuning in to get their opinions from the left, from the right. The list goes on. But then you get a president who's hiding. You got to really read between the lines to figure out even what's going on. But then Nancy Pelosi says this. They go back to the Russia conspiracies, which were all debunked during the Trump administration. You put out, you know, I see Andrew Weissman on TV, this former prosecutor. He was the lead prosecutor for the Mueller investigation. What did he come up with on President Trump? Zero. Zero. And yet he's a commentator on TV. This is the guy they were saying, oh, he's going to get him. Zero. Zero. But still, take a listen to Nancy Pelosi.
Now, let's just make a contrast. The former president of the United States, for whatever reason, whether the Russians had personal, political, or financial leverage over him just kowtowed, catered to Putin in a way that was humiliating to the United States of America.
Andy, that is an outright lie. An outright lie. The president of the United States, that was all investigated, even for no reason, over and over and over again. And people like Andrew Weissman, Nancy Pelosi's team, Adam Schiff's team, the list goes on. They could never find anything that she just discussed. There was never proven any kind of personal, political, or financial leverage that the Russians had over President Trump. He had a different idea of how to handle the Russians, and they just didn't like that policy. At the State Department bureaucrats, who I have very little respect for the most part, especially the policymakers there, not the people out around the world who risk their life in tough countries, but these the Washington, D.C. bureaucrats, they just couldn't stand someone with a new idea of how to handle Russia, just like they had a new idea of how to handle the Middle East.
You're absolutely correct, Jordan. It's not the party line. It's not the line that the bureaucrats wanted to hear. President Trump was a voice crying in the wilderness. He confronted the Russian menace. He confronted the Chinese. He confronted whoever needed to be confronted in the name of the United States and America first. And when I hear President Biden saying that my staff is going to be angry at me or they're going to be mad at me for deviating from the script, it doesn't just disappoint me, Jordan. It disgusts me to hear the president of the United States being afraid that his handlers are going to be angry because he didn't follow the script, because he didn't do what he was supposed to do in the prep meeting, because he diverted himself in during the debate that they had before, and how he was going to handle the questions and go on to something that is not something that President Trump would have ever done. He would have said, I don't care who listens to me, or rather who advises me. I'm going to say what is in the best interest of the United States, and my handlers and the people who advise me are not going to take precedence over my position as the leader of the American people, as the leader of the free world, as the commander-in-chief of the strongest power in the United States. And when I see somebody like President Biden taking that approach, really, it undermines my faith in the leadership of the United States as a world power, and it disgusts me to hear the president taking that approach.
You know, Than, we'll put our chat, you know, Nancy Pelosi should be asked which president greenlit Putin's number one infrastructure project, the Nord Stream 2, we call it, sometimes in the media called Nord 2, the gas pipeline, and it was the Biden administration that came in, that was stopped, and one of the first actions they took at the foreign policy level between Germany and Russia was to lift the sanctions that were threatened if that pipeline was completed, and allowed it to be completed so that Russia gets an influx of cash, and Germany is now dependent on Russian gas.
Yeah, of course it was, Jordan. I mean, actions always speak louder than words, and this administration's actions around the world are the definition of leading from behind. Look, one of the things you talked earlier about how Rick tweeted that Vladimir Putin is loving this new posture. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, Jordan, in the interview that he gave over the weekend, he was asked twice if he's a killer, and he just kind of laughed it off. And it was very clear watching that interview, Jordan, that he loves the insinuation. He loves the insinuation that he can be asked this without getting significant pushback from the one entity in the world that should have the moral footing to push back against him. That's the United States of America. Right now, Jordan, he's just not worried about that.
No, folks, this is what I want to do. Second half hour, I really want to start taking more of your comments. Whether they come in through Facebook, YouTube, or by calling us on the air, 1-800-684-3110. How do you believe these foreign trips are impacting the United States and the image of the United States abroad? Do you have problems with it? Questions about it? Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. We want to have you on the air.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, 1-800-684-31. Did I give out that number? Because I think, you know, as we kind of saw the G7 come to a close, we see the NATO meeting beginning, and then the summit with Putin on Wednesday in Geneva. There's a lot to talk about, but I want your input as well. One, are you following this? You know, obviously, if you listen to this broadcast, you're getting updated on it. But is this something you believe is important because it's how, you know, it formulates how America, how the world sees America, especially America's leadership, when you have a transfer to a new president? And whether you like that transfer or not, the world is working with the Biden administration, and the Biden administration appears to be capitulating a lot to the world. Michelle on Facebook wrote in, "I can't believe the entire world is ignoring the genocide and atrocities being committed by the Chinese Communist Party in comparison to how we faced the 1930s in Europe. Has everyone forgotten the Holocaust?" I mean, Than, the group that was meeting together, that we have these alliances, the G7, NATO, the United Nations, I mean, the list goes on and on. We have these summits. We try to do these things both diplomatically, but also we, you know, post-COVID, you know, we encourage travel, business between these countries to prevent those atrocities from occurring. But we have one ongoing right now, Than, and the G7 leaders weren't willing to use the word.
Here's the truth, Jordan. The world needs U.S. leadership. It always has, and it's going to moving forward. When you get a sort of a summit like this, a communication document like the one that we saw, I'm holding excerpts of it in my hand. We've talked about it during the course of this broadcast. Jordan, this is almost always what you get. You get milquetoast designations because you've got to go to the least common denominator. So they're never strong enough. But here's what's required, Jordan. The world needs the United States to say, look, okay, there are some good things in that document, but it doesn't go nearly far enough. We have said that the Chinese government is engaging in genocide of the Uyghur people. This document does not say that. We are willing to say it, and we're going to call on not only the G7, but the other countries of the world to step up and do what it takes to stop that genocide. Jordan, this kind of document, the fact that it exists, that's not the surprising or the disappointing part. The disappointing part is that the United States is now saying, yep, that's enough. That satisfies us. Jordan, the role that we've got to play in the world in order to make strides has to be a stronger one than that.
Yeah, I mean, Andy, when we look at this, we're going to start taking people's phone calls too. We come back from the break. If we got two lines open right now. So if you want to get on the conversation, this is the time to do it. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. How nervous are you about this Putin and Biden summit? But of course, how the media will portray it, because they're going to do separate press conferences, so they're not going to have to stand there together. I really want your thoughts on that. 1-800-684-3110. We're going to start taking those phone calls in the next segment, so just about 3 minutes. So get in if you've got a question for us, if you've got a comment for us. We do have a couple lines open for you at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. But Andy, if you can't even get the G7 to come together and be a little, and be tougher on China, and be tougher on Russia, and they've all got their own interest, and this is what Rick is always warning about: consensus leads to weakness.
It always does, because as someone just said, the lowest common denominator. I think Than mentioned that you're looking to get the lowest common denominator of acquiescence and agreement on a statement that everybody can live with. But that's not the idea of leadership. Leadership is not finding the lowest common denominator. That's appeasement. It's appeasement which led to the disaster of the Second World War. People don't read history anymore. They don't understand that you've got to say and call it out for what it is. What the Chinese are doing to the Uyghur people needs to be called out. If it's not going to be called out in a joint communique, then President Biden, on behalf of the United States, the leader of the free world, has to call that out himself. He doesn't have to say, well, my handlers or my advisors are not going to like it. I don't like it, and I'm going to call it out.
You know, we got one line open. We're going to start taking those calls if we take calls the next two segments, even, because I really want people's thoughts. We're kind of in this middle zone. We haven't gotten the reports out of the NATO meeting yet. You saw what the G7 concluded with, very weak statements. And of course, Putin, Biden on Wednesday. Give us a call. One line open, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Music.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Your comment, one line open, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to go, and we'll, one more line will be open in just a second because I want to go right to Frank in North Carolina on line two. Hey, Frank, welcome to Seculo. You're on the air. Hey, Frank, you there? Looks like we may have dropped Frank, so we'll hold back. We'll check. We'll go check to make sure Frank is still there on the line. If you want to talk to us, 1-800-684-3110. Let me just kind of, because we jumped right into it when we came back from the first half hour break. So you had the G7 meeting. You have these countries that came together. They then issue this communique at the end. This is the joint statement. The joint statement calls for a second World Health Organization investigation into the origins of COVID-19 in China. They don't say maybe an independent investigation led by G7 investigators. Who would be more in line. But no, they give it back to the World Health Organization, who already sent a team in that was very compromised. A lot of them were on the Chinese payroll, and then, of course, this is an organization that kind of China oversees through bad dealings. But they've already said there was no way lab leak. So you're going to send the same people back who are compromised the same way to do another report, which is now going to, again, likely would refute the idea that's now gained acceptance on both sides of the aisle politically and in the mainstream media and in the Western world, that this was not likely just a genetic mutation that was able to jump from animal to human. That even if it started off at an animal level, it would have been much weaker and it would have been something that they boosted the strength of, that controversial scientific strategy of combating potential pandemics in the future, the gain of function research that created this much stronger virus, that would still be the fault of the Wuhan lab for releasing that on the world. But I do want to take your calls, your comments, 1-800-684-3110. Richard in California, online three. Hey, Richard, welcome to Seculo.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and God's blessings to you guys. I just have two comments. First of all, why does anything that this president say or do, especially during this world trip, surprise anybody? They can't even handle the border. Number two is we're talking about Uyghurs. The Uyghurs are Muslim Chinese. What I don't understand is China and Iran are bedfellows, but yet Iran hasn't said anything about their brother, Muslim brothers.
Oh, because if you're not the right kind of Muslim for Iran, they don't care. And if ethnically you're not really in line with Iran, they don't care. So, but it does speak to a larger point, Andy, which is that the Muslim world has not stood up for the Uyghurs. So not just Iran, but other Muslim countries and the kind of woke mainstream media who you would think would love pointing out that China was engaged in this, except for the fact that we've now found out time and time again how important China is to so many of those news outlets because of their subsidiaries of bigger companies doing lots of business in China, and just like the movie industry, the sports industries of the United States. So they are careful not to offend the Chinese. So that's why I don't think we hear it from the Muslim world. We don't hear it out of our even when the U.S. designates it, no one wants to spend any time talking about it.
Well, I think your analysis is exactly correct, Jordan. The Chinese are going to get a free pass from the world at large whenever they want it and from whomever they want it. The Muslims, like you say, the Uyghurs are not the brand of Muslims that the Iranians are and that the Iranians support. Therefore, let the Chinese do to our co-religionists, even though they're not quite our co-religionists, they're somewhat schismatic, but we're going to let them do what they want to them because we depend upon the Chinese. The Chinese are going to get a free pass in the world because people like the United States government, our president, does not stand up to them with the vigor and force, in my estimation, that his predecessor, President Trump, did. The communiques that are put out are watered down. They seek the lowest common denominator. They seek to just simply slap them on the wrist for what they do, but they don't call them out. This is the victory of the Chinese sub silentio. This is the victory that the Chinese have gotten worldwide. And it's something that I think is atrocious and terrible in our foreign policy. When a president is afraid to speak out because of what his people or his advisors may think of what his deviation from the script is going to do is shameful.
You know, I want to play this bite from Nancy Pelosi and then go to Thad first because to me, it's just shocking how they just make up the line. And if the media doesn't call them out for it, that's the line that gets printed. That's the statement that gets broadcast. Take a listen, Bite 32.
When Putin hears about some of the violations of the rights of his own people, he laughs. This is a thug. But he is the head of an important state in terms of the issues you raised. Mm-hmm. The president should meet with him. And I think he's going to meet a very different president than one who was at the mercy of Putin.
Fan, under the Obama-Biden administration, Putin unilaterally went into and annexed Crimea without any serious consequences. Went into a sovereign country and with a military, which is, by the way, still an active conflict going on the Ukraine border with Russia, but went into the Crimea and annexed it unilaterally. When Vladimir Putin walks in to meet with Joe Biden, he's going to see the president who greenlighted his pipeline with Germany and a former vice president who the administration served in did nothing but slap them on the wrist vocally for annexing an autonomous country and doing so through the threat of military force.
Jordan, the speaker is correct about two things on this. Vladimir Putin is a thug, and when he walks into the room, he is going to encounter a very different president than he did last time. He's going to encounter a president that will not stand in the way of much of his global ambition. And actually, there was an interview that aired on NBC over the weekend with Vladimir Putin, the same one where he chuckled when asked if he was a killer. And he was asked about Iran. And let me read to you part of his response, Jordan. Vladimir Putin said, "We have cooperation plans with Iran, including the military and technical cooperation. And all of this fits the framework of the decisions that were agreed upon in our program in regard to Iran's nuclear program in the context of U.S. decisions together with our partnerships in the preparation of the JCPOA, whereby some point sanctions, including the area of military and technical cooperation, should be lifted from Iran." Jordan, what he's saying there is yes, we're in alliance with Iran. And why is that okay? Because the JCPOA allows it. Jordan, he is using the posture of the Obama administration and now the Biden administration to not only partner with Iran, but say, it's okay because you said it was okay. I would say that's a different administration than the last one he encountered.
I want to get into this, too. NBC News has not put the clip out, but they're putting some of the written text out from the interview they did with Vladimir Putin, and he speaks directly to Iran and providing Iran with military assistance. So I'm going to save that to read the next segment of the broadcast and get your thoughts and comments on that, because, again, right now we just have the text of that. And this is, again, I think that the idea when we go back to this, that this is what Iran's doing, that, you know, Thad was talking about it, Thad was going through it, that they are using what already exists through, like, the JCPOA to justify their actions with Iran. And we just had a statement out of the G7 about how they're so excited about getting back to the JCPOA. So this is again, I think that it's a big picture. And then you've got to look at all these individual issues. And I think it's just crushing the Biden administration right now. They've not had a lot of success domestically. Their domestic policy so far has been stalling legislatively. You have Vice President Harris, that trip widely now panned by both sides of the aisle and the media. And President Biden, who is not doing the normal actions of a U.S. president, he is doing the normal Biden actions, which is to hide from the media as much as possible, only engage when necessary. So it looks like throughout his entire European trip, he will only be speaking and taking questions, only be taking questions from the U.S. press once after the G7, and then once after this summit with Putin. Maybe he'll make another statement, you know, I don't know if he'll take questions or not, after the NATO meetings. But again, I want to get your thoughts on this. We're going to talk about Israel too. There has been a power shift in Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu is now former Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's in the opposition. The question is, how long does this new coalition ask? Is this a long-term move? Is this short-term? It's on the thinnest of thinnest margins in Israel. So we'll talk about that as well, get your thoughts on that, and answer your questions about it as well. Because that's a big shift for the United States and for those of you who support Israel to have a different leader. You got used to Prime Minister Netanyahu, now former Prime Minister. Who is the new Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett? We'll talk about that as well. We come back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org.
So I think a lot of you would probably want some insight into what is going on in Israel to kind of finish out today, because we've been focusing on the world, but obviously the U.S. perspective. We're going to stay on, too, especially what happens if you've got calls, too. We'll take them throughout the segment, 1-800-684-3110, to talk to us on the air. I really want to know how that Erdogan meeting goes. At some point, it looks like after the show, we'll find out about that. So if there was anything there, we'll report back tomorrow. And, of course, the lead-up to the meeting with Putin, which is going to get so much attention. But then we now know they're not going to be doing that joint press conference as of now. So what we're going to mostly get is Biden's account and Putin's account. They could be very different, and we're not going to know much about it, because they're not going to have to answer questions back and forth while they stand there together. That didn't happen in the UK either. But there's been a power shift in Israel. A new Israeli prime minister has been sworn in. It is Naftali Bennett, a former top advisor to Prime Minister Netanyahu, who broke off to form his own political party, which is very small, but put together a coalition with some left-leaning leaders, and including, again, Yair Lapid, who is supposed to do this power-sharing government where Naftali Bennett is the prime minister for 2 years, and then Lapid for the next 2 years. So they actually were sworn in as the 13th and 14th prime minister. Problem is, for Netanyahu is not just stepping away from politics, has not made the decision to do that. He believes so far that this coalition is so weak. And we'll point out some of the weaknesses there. Not to wish them not success, but the idea is that you have a coalition of the right, a small group of right wing leaders, the left, and kind of more moderate parties, and for the first time ever, the United Arab parties. If one of the 120 members of the Knesset, just one, switches sides back to Netanyahu's coalition, which they can do, there's a power shift again. Things change. That coalition would crumble. The coalition would fall. There would have to then potentially be new elections as well. So this is very fragile in Israel right now. And it's at a time when Israel is facing unprecedented action. You know, we saw the actions from Hamas. We saw how Iran was boasting of those actions. We see the nuclear deal again moving forward. So I want, we have an office in Jerusalem. Again, and you wish a new government well, but I do want to point out the difference between kind of our system and their system. And Andy, when you see a government that is, again, it's 60-59, it's kind of similar to our U.S. Senate, but this would determine, unlike the U.S. Senate would make up the Senate, this would determine the makeup of who is in charge. And so there are a lot of people casting doubt on whether or not, for the second time in a row, a opposition leader who joins a coalition that really isn't a coalition that agrees on anything will never actually get their time to be prime minister. A lot of people, it's kind of like a joke to think that there's going to go full 4 years in Israel without another election.
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct. This is the very most fragile of coalitions. And this is the problem with a parliamentary democracy in which you have multiple political parties, each of which is trying to join with another to come up with a government or not, as the case may be. And as you say, you lose one member in the Knesset and you've lost your government, and your government has to reform. Naftali Bennett is, for the moment, prime minister. But you know, Jordan, that could change in a day. It could change in 2 days, in a week, in a month. It may not last very long. He was with Netanyahu. He is from Haifa. His parents are migrants from the United States to Israel, who came, and he was born after the formation of the State of Israel in 1948. So he's not necessarily a new face in Israeli politics. He's been around for a long time. But again, President Prime Minister Netanyahu is by no means out of the scene. He is in the wings. He is not retired from politics. He has not announced that. And he may very well be prime minister yet again in a very short time, or someone else may be altogether. Very fragile in Israel right now.
It's interesting. Former Prime Minister Netanyahu, this is only within the last couple of days since we've been talking to you on Friday. He claimed in his speech before the changeover and the new prime minister took charge that the Biden administration had asked him, and this was kind of unusual to see prime minister of Israel at the time. He had not yet stepped down and passed the torch, and he's not stepping down as leader of the opposition right now. So he believes that he can use his political know-how and knowledge to pick apart at this coalition very quickly. And see himself returned back to the prime minister post. But he said that the Biden administration had asked him to keep their disagreements on Iran in private. Now, this idea that the it's just interesting to see how the U.S., I'm sure that we say that all the time, let's not put our disagreements out in the open. But Prime Minister Netanyahu thought it was important to let his own people know, speaking in Hebrew. So it wasn't just an international audience he was talking to, but to his own people, about how this new administration was treating the Israeli government.
Well, I think it shows you just how fervently he believes it. And the hope would be that the new administration there in Israel would see it the same way. Look, I mean, I think for me on this side of the water, Jordan, and being more familiar with American politics, the interesting thing to me is what might cause this coalition to pivot back towards Netanyahu. And to me, Jordan, the most likely thing would actually be relationships with the United States and this issue of Iran. I mean, I think that's probably why Prime Minister Netanyahu was so forward in his outgoing address, was saying, look, I know the U.S. administration would like me to be silent, but this is the threat that our people face, and I'm not going to be silent about it. Jordan, I would hope his successor would see things the same way, but ultimately, I think the new coalition government, there's going to be different factions in them. I think Bennett is probably more likely to be of a similar mold than Netanyahu, but again, it's a very fragmented coalition. Will they be able to come together and have a unified posture on that issue? I don't know the answer to that, Jordan, but I do think the answer is going to be the most significant determining factor on whether or not they're able to keep that coalition together.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about this coalition is that Naftali Bennett is actually more right-wing. And we talked about this last week, but he's more right-wing on paper, policy-wise, even than Netanyahu, who is considered right-wing in Israel and considered right-wing by the world, certainly. But he's partnered with, within his coalition, are people who do not share those views at all. So the question is, how do you govern? How do you govern without that crumbling? It's one thing if everybody typically agrees it is on the right or the left, and maybe if you're on the right and the left, you bring in a party that's kind of in the middle. The decisions that he can make on his own without the Knesset, I think will be very similar to Prime Minister Netanyahu's when it comes to defending Israel, the policies. But the decision he's got to go to the Knesset to, I think that's when the problems occur. That's why former Prime Minister Netanyahu is lying in wait to seize on that opportunity. We will see what happens, and we'll keep you updated as well, because it's important for us as we have an office in Jerusalem because of your support for the ACLJ. As always, if you can support us, donate online at aclj.org. We will talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.